The Syncopated Times is a monthly newspaper that focuses on hot jazz, ragtime, and swing. And Joe Bebko is the associate editor. In April of this year, he wrote a very personal review of a concert he had just attended. At 5:15 p.m. on April 5th, my partner asked, "Are you going to that ragtime band tonight?" The concert had slipped my mind. I had no intention of going anywhere. My head flooded with reasons to stay home, but my better angels won, and I found myself sitting with our publisher, Andy Senior, and shaking hands with several local subscribers to the paper as the Paragon Ragtime Orchestra began a pageant of American music at the Rome, New York Capitol Theater. The house, to my surprise, was mostly full. On the way there, Andy explained the uniqueness of the event, an acoustic, unamplified 12-piece concert orchestra of the 1890s to 1920s playing vintage instruments in a restored theater of the type that could have hosted them in 1905. The Paragon Ragtime Orchestra, now in its 39th year, is the world's only year-round professional ensemble dedicated to recreating the syncopated sounds of early musical theater, silent cinema, and vintage dance. Rick Benjamin formed the orchestra after discovering thousands of historic orchestral scores from the Victor Archives while he was attending Juilliard. Benjamin is a leading expert on silent film accompaniment, making the Capitol Theater an especially appropriate venue. Hearing this music, performed in this setting, by these people, is not something you can capture on YouTube or even on an album played at home on a good stereo. The experience requires being in the room, focusing on the stage and its surroundings with eyes, ears, and occasionally a tapping foot, feeling it rawly and cementing it into memory. A pageant of American music was a portal back in time. The concert featured Scott Joplin, Sousa, Gershwin, Kern, Berlin, Mel Kaufman, George Cobb, and others. There was an excellent Stephen Foster medley in an arrangement from 1892. Orchestrations were from Rick Benjamin's 20,000 title collection. There were recognizable hits, but also unique material to celebrate Rome, New York, including Down by the Erie Canal. They closed with the Heart of Rome March, which, as Benjamin commented, may not even have been heard in a century. It sounded to me like a collective memory of Rome, New York in 1900, a bustling immigrant center full of new Americans and the new syncopated American music. We learn that the Paragon Ragtime Orchestra made its formal debut in 1988 at Alice Tully Hall in New York, marking the first Lincoln Center concert by such an ensemble. Since then, the group has performed at hundreds of prominent arts venues worldwide and gained a loyal following through radio broadcasts on WQXR, NPR programs such as All Things Considered and Performance Today, and international networks, including the BBC and Voice of America. On Friday, October 17th, the Paragon Ragtime Orchestra will perform as part of Susquehanna University's inaugural Symposium on Historic American Music, at which early American music from spirituals, brass bands, and string ensembles to the rise of ragtime, blues, and early jazz will be presented. We spoke by phone with Rick Benjamin in connection with the symposium and with the orchestra's newest CD. The album is titled Meet Me at the Fair, Sights and Sounds from the Great World's Fairs. The symposium will be filled with impassioned experts who will share their insights about historic American music, and there will be wonderful performances along the way. But what we'll hear from Rick Benjamin, and we might gloss over, is that even though he is now teaching as an adjunct faculty member who is arranging an academic symposium at Susquehanna University, this is his first time teaching like this in 40 years or so. He's done intense research on the music all along, of course, but he's been the artistic director and conductor of the Paragon Ragtime Orchestra all this time. And what that says is that Benjamin is totally committed to this music and keeping it alive for us today. Rick Benjamin has spent his career sharing the music worldwide. That's his priority. So when he plans a symposium, you can be assured that he'll invite premier experts who respect the music as much as he does, but also that there will be performances galore to make sure that the music is front and center, to keep it alive and not just filed away in repositories to be studied, but to be played on the concert stage in the here and now. We will learn more about the symposium on the art scene feature tomorrow, but today we'll learn how Rick Benjamin was introduced to this music and why he is so passionate about it. You and I have talked over the years about your own musical education and then ultimately how you found the cache of scores and Paragon and so forth, but I wonder if you wouldn't mind going back to young Rick. I'm curious when you first were aware of these early examples of American music. You yourself, were you like Charles Ives in a gazebo listening to town bands? How did you first hear it?
Well, something like that, I suppose. I'm from a family of musicians. My grandfather was a professional violinist, and my mother was a professional organist and choir director. So my entire childhood was infused with music and going to rehearsals and following those folks around, especially my mom, various churches. Well, she played the organ for different things. But when I was 10, I found my grandmother's Victor Victrola in her garage. She had bought it with her first paycheck as a telephone girl in 1917, but it had been sitting out in the garage since the 50s, I guess. And this was sort of the late 70s when I stumbled across it. And spent the afternoon putting on those shellac records, cranking this thing up, and listening to magic coming to me from across the decades, early 20th century bands and orchestras and singers. And that really grabbed me. I don't know why. It was something very different from the music of the Gerald Ford era, I guess. But I was very excited to hear the exuberance of these performers from the early 20th century. And I started collecting early phonographs and records, wax cylinders and things like that. And at that time, this material was fairly easy to get. People were throwing it on the curb for pickup day, you know. So I had a nice collection of things. And I was studying music, too, classical music, as part of being a member of my household. It was required that you study the piano. So I was taking classical piano lessons and learning the standard rep and getting pretty good at that. Started playing brass instruments in high school, and that took me into various worlds of bands. But basically, my interest goes back to that period of being a kid, spinning early 20th century Victrola records and listening to these sounds. And then, as a music student at Juilliard, quite a few years later, finding the actual orchestra library of the Victor Talking Machine Company, which was being sent to a landfill. And that, of course, as you mentioned moments ago, was what started my orchestra, Paragon Ragtime Orchestra. And here we are.
And that's a sign of that time, as you say, when people are throwing the whole score library going to the landfill. And didn't you get a truck and you went down and said, I don't know where I'm going to put it, but we can't let this happen, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I didn't have a truck. I had my old Dodge Valiant sedan, you know, with the bumpers falling off, and made repeated trips back and forth to this place and cleared out the warehouse. I didn't get everything out before higher up in a hard hat basically threw me out. So the building did eventually get pulled down with some scores in there. But I had triaged through the material And, you know, reductions of Beethoven symphonies and standard operas, I left. But musical theater orchestrations and things by African-American composers, basically things that I felt probably didn't exist anyplace else, were things that I picked up and saved. And since then, actually, that scene has recurred a few times now. I have found other large collections, including the music library of the Germania Society, which was America's first professional orchestra. Back in the 1840s, before the New York Philharmonic, I found their music recently in a warehouse in Providence, Rhode Island. That's a story for some other time. But my collection now of orchestra music is over 20,000 numbers, 3 tons of material. And that's one of the things that is a theme of our symposium here at Susquehanna University, preserving this material and maybe finding a future home for it. And that's why we've called the symposium Conclave of Experts, coming up in October to talk about American music from the 19th century and early 20th century and perform it for each other and discuss it and explore things in that manner.
You don't mean to tell us that there is no place like, no repository right now for a lot of this music, like the Library of Congress or things like that. They're still scattered around?
Oh, yeah. And I think that's a good thing, not to knock the Library of Congress or the Smithsonian, because they have amazing collections of things. But what they do not have is, first of all, funds for ready preservation and making the material available. They have collections there in Washington that have been sitting in the basement for, you know, 20 years that haven't been processed. So basically, it's not a super great place to put your stuff. Not to, again, disparage them, because I know a lot of the guys who are in charge of all that, and I love them. In fact, some of them are coming up in a couple of weeks to be here. But some of the large national repositories are not actually totally congenial for what we're talking about in terms of preservation. So smaller institutions probably better, especially in this age now of scanning and digital preservation. You know, we can save things and make them accessible. You don't necessarily have to travel to a major city anymore to see things.
Now, when you had the idea for the symposium, what did you think then when you told us about the notion of hashing it over with each other about what to do in this case, making the music available, preserving it, and so forth? How did you approach that? So when, how did the idea bubble up? And then what was the best way you could determine to do that?
Well, it started right after what we call the Great Unpleasantness, or COVID, when the orchestra and I had been off the road for a while. In fact, it was, you know, almost 2 years of canceled bookings. And I was sitting in my office in Lewisburg. And my wife had been teaching at Susquehanna University in the music department over a few years, 8 or 10 years, and had always mentioned what a nice experience she was having there. And I'd never had an academic position or teaching position anywhere, and was too busy to have one. I was a full-time performer, and really still am. And I'm very proud of that, by the way. There are not too many people that have paid all the bills, fed the kids, and paid the mortgage on stage and in the recording studio for 40 years. That's what I did. So I wasn't doing any teaching. But about a year or so after things started getting back to normal, I had a call from the music department at Susquehanna, from a fellow who was the chairman of the department. And he said, you know, you've been doing really interesting things all these years, saving this music, making, literally recording hundreds of pieces, giving performances in most of the nation's major concert halls. Would you consider putting together some curriculum for us and maybe teaching here a little bit? What would you think about that? So I thought about it. I've done lectures at other universities and colleges, one-shot things where you'll go in and talk about the music of early 20th century Manhattan or the life of Scott Joplin or something. But I'd never actually developed a course. But I thought about it, and I finally decided yes. And something that would be interesting would be early cinema music, because there's really no place in the world you can go and study this. And I'm a guy who has preserved 900 motion picture scores from the early 20th century and conducted about 800 performances of them over all these decades. So there's very few people in the world who know more about this subject. So I put together a 20-part course for them called The Art and Technique of Sound for Silent Cinema. and this was in 2023, and started teaching in the spring of that year. It's two times a week, an hour and a half. And I've had 60 students since that time studying how to create music for silent film using my materials. And so one day the chairman said, wow, you know, this is going really well. We want you to do some other things here. And gradually this conversation has blossomed into, well, let's have a symposium. Let's talk about centering some of your research and work right here at Susquehanna. And that's the conversation we're in right now.
At the symposium, Rick, you'll be sharing some of the music from your newest recording, and you're good enough to share a bit of it with our listeners as well. Tell us about it.
It's music of the Great American World Fairs, music that was played at the 1876 Centennial, the 1893 Columbian Exposition, the 1901 Pan American Exposition, the 1904 St. Louis World's Fair, and finally, the Panama Pacific Exposition in San Francisco in 1915. So I've selected music from each of those, as well as images, paintings, photographs, lithographs. And so we perform each of these sections. We visit each of these fairs, both visually and sonically. And that's the program. So we're doing that here on the 17th, but we made a cast album of it this past week with all the various performers.
It is so decorative.
Yeah. Well, the final idea is to actually issue the album in a coffee table book with all of these images very beautifully reproduced. But in the meantime, we are going to issue it as just an audio CD and see how that goes. This is a lot of different things. Some actually really beautiful music, too, that no one seems to know about.
Wasn't Sousa performing in Philadelphia during the World's Fair?
Yes, actually, Sousa has multiple connections to World's Fairs. The first is as a 19-year-old violinist in 1876, when he was engaged to play in Jacques Offenbach's orchestra. Mr. Offenbach was brought from Paris to conduct in a special pavilion for the centennial. And he had his own orchestra there, but they're all Americans. And young Philip Sousa was sitting in the back of the first violin sawing away. And apparently this was just a life-altering experience for him to be in a major city playing in this group for a celebrated conductor-composer. And that led him down the ways of becoming a conductor-composer, sort of put his violin to the side, eventually became involved conducting band music, wind bands with the Marines. And in 1893, leaving the Marines, starting his own band, and his first major engagement with the Sousa Band was at the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. And he was such a sensation there with the group that he became a perennial World's Fair musical figure right through to the end of the period of doing World's Fairs with live music.
We know so often that the promoters and the people who are putting on and producing the World's Fairs signal that this is not just the present, but we're showcasing the future of the city of Chicago and the future of humankind and all sorts of things. Was the music put forth under that umbrella too?
Sometimes it was, yes. How this is uplifting, it's advancing civilization. Yes, there's quite a bit of that, how we must, through both new music and also traditional music, you know, bringing Beethoven to the masses, for example. Yes, uplift was definitely a part of all this. But so was fun, too. Some of the music is very, very silly. Like one of the 1876 centennial pieces we play is the Telephone Gallop. The telephone, Alexander Graham Bell's invention, was the sensation of the 1876 fair. Imagine being able to talk to someone you can't even see. I mean, this is incredible. I don't know how this even works, but the things we take for granted right now were miraculous and actually are miraculous. But so it's a funny little piece with bells ringing and people shouting, you know, ahoy, because that's how you answered a phone in 1876. So yes, the uplift, the silliness, the sentimentality, basically the spectrum of human emotion was represented in all of this music.
Rick Benjamin, founder and director of the Paragon Ragtime Orchestra, based in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, and celebrated worldwide. The Paragon Ragtime Orchestra will present the concert Meet Me at the Fair, sights and sounds from the Great World's Fairs at 7:30 p.m. Friday, October 17th at Susquehanna University's Stratansky Concert Hall in the Cunningham Center for Music and Art on the campus in Sealands Grove. And the title of the concert is the title of this new recording. We're hearing Panamericana by Victor Herbert. The concert is part of Susquehanna University's inaugural symposium on historic American music, at which early American music, from spirituals, brass bands, and string ensembles to the rise of ragtime blues and early jazz, will be presented. We had a conversation about this recording and how the Paragon Ragtime Orchestra came to be in today's art scene feature, and tomorrow we'll center our continuing conversation with Rick Benjamin on the symposium itself. The symposium runs from October 16th through the 18th and will include live performances, scholarly lectures and research, and interactive workshops. The music groups or performers feature Grammy Award winner Dom Flemons, the 8th Green Machine Regiment Band, and the Roof Garden Jazz Band, as well as Susquehanna's Symphonic Band under Eric Hinton, who is director of bands at the campus. Speakers include Columbia University's John H. McWhorter, who is also a columnist for the New York Times, and American musicologist and author Edward A. Berlin, who is widely regarded as one of the world's leading authorities on ragtime composer Scott Joplin. He wrote the definitive biography. For more information on the concert and the symposium, visit susqu.edu/symposium, susqu.edu/symposium.